A Dancer of Fortune by John Munani. Table of Contents, Part 1. The Philosophy of the Pocket and the Ibarra Spectacle, Part 2. The Domestic Tension, Iyasco and Bessie, Part 3. The Patent Medicine Wars of Deco, Part IV. Internal Conflict, Ogoroba, Mariana, and the Plastic Models, Part V. The Disaster at Kara and the Germ Scandal, Part V. The Rise of Deo Valente and Iyasco's Gambit, Part 7. The Iyasco Medical Stores and the Final Transformation, Part 8. The Legal Reckoning and the Moral Lesson, Major Themes and Literary Elements. John Munanier's A Dancer of Fortune is a vibrant and satirical exploration of the patent medicine trade in Nigeria, centered on the charismatic and engaging rascal, Iyasco, Aya Ijiroko. Iyasco is a professional dancer whose unique talent for attracting crowds makes him an indispensable marketing asset to various medicine dealers in the town of Deco. The novel traces Iyasco's career as he navigates the cutthroat rivalries of the Big Four dealers Sabanco, Marabu, Averido, and Eddie Chindi while managing the domestic pressures of his ambitious wife, Bessie, and eventually transforming himself from a mere advertising tool into an independent entrepreneur who outwits the entire industry. Part 1. The Philosophy of the Pocket and the Ibarra Spectacle. The novel introduces Iyasco as a man whose mouth is always as busy as his feet. Working for Averido Medicals, Iyasco presents a cynical but pragmatic philosophy of the trade. Medicine is not just for the diseases of the body, but for the diseases of the pocket. He argues that a dealer should continue to sell medicine even when it has lost its potency to cure a physical ailment, because its sale will still cure the financial ailment of the dealer's pocket. This pragmatism is illustrated when Averido holds up a bottle of merged, potency-lost tablets, and Iyasco encourages him not to throw them away, noting that manufacturers are wise because they tell patients to see a doctor if the illness continues, rather than offering a refund. Iyasco's primary value lies in his dancing feet. Averido's shop, though located in a high-density area, requires the spectacle of Iyasco to expand its name and reach customers beyond the local vicinity. The novel provides a detailed account of a marketing expedition to Ibarra Market. The campaign is led by Ogoroba, Averido's short, solid, and inimitable salesman, who uses a loudspeaker to demand the attention of the crowd, promising something interesting and indescribable. When Iyasco performs, he is a compelling presence. At Ibarra, he wears a riotous outfit, a striped shirt, yellow and red trousers so tight they seem painted on, a wide straw hat with colorful frills, and dark sunglasses that cover half his face. He dances to the Money Monger Calypso, his favorite tune, employing a limp grace and mazy movements that leave the spectators spellbound. This spectacle allows Ogoroba to pitch Averido's products, such as Dentacream, to mimic Iyasco's sky-white teeth, and Osteopar, a medicine claimed to cure everything from bone disease to infertility. The campaign is a massive success, resulting in a stampede of buyers and leaving Averido's cash box poured into, like sand, Part 2, The Domestic Tension, Iyasco and Bessie. The public success of the dancer is contrasted with his private domestic struggles. His wife, Bessie, is a sensible girl who comes from a wealthy family background. Her father was a businessman with five wives and many children. Bessie feels she married down to a market clown and is constantly pushing Iyasco for social mobility. She is frantically anxious to see him better placed in life and views his profession of writing with his feet as an odd and undignified waste of his talents. Their home is a single, over-large room screened with a curtain for privacy, where they live with their two children, Abel and a younger son. Bessie frequently critiques Iyasco's exuberant masquerade outfits and urges him to find a more human profession. She is particularly concerned about his lack of financial stability, noting that despite his high earnings and commissions, there is little sign of savings or a better home. The history of their marriage reveals Iyasco's forthright, fearless nature. When they first met, he was a tramp with no abode, but Bessie was captivated by his dark, hairy skin, fast speech, and endless humor. When he proposed, her mother was so outraged she threw a stout pestle at him, which he nimbly dodged while laughing. Despite the family's initial rejection, The arrival of two healthy male children eventually made the community forget the scandalous nature of their union. However, Bessie continues to harbor a deep resentment toward the patent medicine dealers, specifically Marabou, who is her mother's relation and who she believes Iyasco should have stayed with to settle down. Part 3. The Patent Medicine Wars of Deco. The novel details the bitter and deep-rooted rivalry between the major dealers. The trade is defined by a lack of formal pharmaceutical training. Averido admits he never went to school but knows good medicine from his years of serving another dealer, Injerica. This war involves the use of aggressive advertising, signboards with dancing neon lights, and even the manipulation of the police. Before joining Averido, Iyasco served Sabanco and Sons, and then Marabou Medicines. Iyasco left Sabanco because the proprietor, Sebastien Okora, lied by claiming to have sons, he only had daughters, and sold only limited products like aspirin and mentholatum. He left Marabou because of the man's ill temper and his attempt to force Iyasco to sing a specific song that insulted his rival. Iyasco's defection to Averido was the winning stroke that allowed Averido to eclipse Marabou in the deco market. In response, the rivalry turned toward police harassment. Two plainclothes policemen searched Averido's house and dispensary, a move Averido reciprocated by having the police visit Marabou. During these raids, the police removed injection tubes, capsules, and even Marabou's patent medicine dealer's license. This environment of hate, intrigue, and bad blood was fueled by the high profit margins of the small tablets. Part 4. Internal Conflict. Ogoroba, Mariana, and the Plastic Models. Within Averido Medicals, a second conflict brews. Ogoroba, the salesman, and Mariana, Averido's mistress and secretary, are intensely jealous of Iyasco's influence and high wages. Ogoroba, who believes himself the ordained successor to Averido, views Iyasco as a pestilence of a creature and a security risk. Mariana, who holds a protective title of personal secretary, shares this hostility, especially after Iyasco publicly refers to her as Averido's pillow, a term that suggests her status as his sexual companion. Ogoroba and Mariana hold a council of war with Averido, urging him to get rid of the dancer. They argue that Iyasco is becoming too powerful and dictatorial. Ogoroba proposes a radical alternative, replacing Iyasco with plastic models. He suggests using inanimate images to advertise, thereby saving money on wages and eliminating the need for a human dancer. Averido, though initially hesitant because he fears a rival like Deo Valente, will pick Iyasco up, eventually yields to the pressure. He concocts a plan to grant Iyasco a wage increase while simultaneously cutting down the number of days he is allowed to perform, thus reducing his total take-home pay. This decision marks the beginning of Averido's downfall. Part 5. The Disaster at Cara and the Germ Scandal. The transition from human advertising to plastic models culminates in a disastrous trip to Cara. Cara had recently been ravaged by a smallpox epidemic, leaving the population in a state of morbid fear and superstition. Ogoroba, seeking to prove the effectiveness of the plastic models, ties two toys to the vehicle's bumper, one representing sickness, yellow skin, bloated cheeks, and one representing health. The experiment fails spectacularly. When Ogoroba raises a plastic model in the Cara Market Square, the crowd reacts with horror. They believe the objects are germ-breeding charms, intended to reinfect them so that Averido can sell more medicine. Influenced by a local figure named Dondadinenu, election machine, who points out that the models are not the real, human Iyasco, the crowd turns into a violent mob. They attack the vehicle with stones, hammers, and unripe mangoes, and Ogoroba and the driver are forced to flee, leaving the vehicle and all the drugs behind. The news of the Cara disaster spreads through Deco like bird droppings from the cloudless sky. Averido is labeled a germ breeder and a notorious killer. His reputation is shattered, and business comes to a standstill. Iyasco uses this opportunity to make his final defection, delivering a mysterious story of the he-goat to his new prospective employer, Eddie Chinda, signaling his intent to move on. Part 6. The Rise of Deo Valente and Iyasco's Gambit. Eddie Chinda, the proprietor of Deo Valente medicine stores, represents a new generation of dealers. He is young, smart, and better educated, having spent 7 years in a seminary before his uncle Eloge lured him into business with the promise of capital. Despite his education, Chinda initially lacks the public relations instincts of the older dealers, at least until he recruits Ayashko. Ayashko's recruitment by Chinda is a masterpiece of manipulation. Ayashko visits Chinda's house, admiring his modern furniture and television set, and subtly reveals that Averido is now selling without Ayashko, using plastic models. Chinda, desperate to capture the market, offers Ayashko a job. However, Ayashko refuses to fix a wage immediately, instead accepting advances and allowances, which allows him to build a sense of unquestioned loyalty and trust. With Chinda, Ayashko takes over the Deo Valente brand and begins a campaign of total domination. He trains two boys, Eriko and Alaska Bibi, to be young wizards of music and dancing, effectively creating a mobile marketing troupe. He also persuades Chinda to ignore the unofficial code of conduct between dealers and move into rival territories, such as Aspirin, Sabanko's specialty, and pediatric medicine, Averido's specialty, Part 7, the Ayashko medical stores and the final transformation. The novel's most significant twist occurs when Ayashko moves beyond being an employee. Under the guise of setting up Deo Valente extensions, Ayashko secures rooms in a new building at 110 Oken Street. However, the community soon begins to see advertisements and radio announcements for Ayashko medical stores, a brand owned and operated by the dancer himself. Ayashko has learned everything from his various employers: how to source drugs from smugglers, hospital hands, and store attendants, how to run a dispensary, and how to use his own fame as the ultimate trademark. He sets up shops in strategic locations: Oken Street for workers, Wariko for the commercial center, and Dunuko Street directly facing the general hospital, to exploit prescriptions and leakage. Bessie is overjoyed by this transformation. She finally has her own medicine store, and she believes the leg flinging will stop. Ayashko, however, maintains that for an old man, the head dances better than the foot, implying his new role as a businessman is just a different kind of performance. Part 8. The Legal Reckoning and the Moral Lesson. The novel concludes with a high-profile court case brought by Eddie Chinda and his lawyer, Landa, against Ayashko for trademark infringement or breach of contract. The precincts of the court are packed with Ayashko's fans, many wearing imitation Ayashko dresses and sunglasses. In a symbolic moment, the four rival dealers Sabanko, Marabu, Averido, and Chinda are assembled in one spot for the first time. They stand in a circle, looking like mere husks of human beings in impressive attire. Lanson, the manager of King's Chemist, delivers a blistering summary of the situation. He points out that Ayashko is a clever fellow who used each dealer in turn to destroy the other, and has now successfully captured the market for himself. The case effectively ends not with a legal judgment but with a social one. Ayashko and Bessie arrive at the court in a taxi, acknowledging the cheers of the crowd with pride and dignity. Even the police presence is undermined, as Ogoroba is seen conferring with a detective about a pistol he was secretly carrying. Ayashko waves a general good morning to his former employers, the engaging rascal having finally achieved the fortune and status he sought. Major themes and literary elements: the power of dance and music. The novel emphasizes that the hearts of the people of Deko are all music. Ayashko's success is a direct result of this cultural value, which the medicine dealers exploit for profit. The conflict of traditionalism versus modernity. This is seen in the contrast between the uneducated, big men like Marabu and Averido and the seminary-trained Eddie Chinda. However, the book suggests that street smarts and public relations, Ayashko, are more effective than formal education alone. Social mobility and gender roles. Bessie's character represents the intense pressure on Nigerian men to provide senior service, comfort. Her desire for a two-room apartment and expensive lace drives much of the plot's momentum. Satire of the medical profession. The book mocks the lack of regulation in the patent medicine trade, where dealers give themselves titles like personal secretary or personal physician and dispense powerful and painful injections without training. Fortune and opportunism. The title reflects the central theme: fortune is not just found. It is danced for and seized through the strategic use of other people's greed. A Dancer of Fortune remains a classic of African literature for its sharp wit, its vivid depiction of Nigerian urban life in the mid-20th century, and its complex portrayal of a character who turns his marginal status as a clown into a source of immense power and wealth. This summary is for educational purposes only.